the big British castle. It's time for Adam and Joe to broadcast on the radio. There'll be some music and some random talking in between, and then eventually the whole thing will just end.
That's Folds with Olympic Airways. Good morning. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music, only it's not because it's just Joe, because Adam, listeners, has failed to turn up. We're not sure where he is. We think he's somewhere in his car. In the building? Is he in the building? But he's got to get through the various portcullises here at the castle. He's got to get the permission from the yeomen and the beefeaters and the grenadiers that guard the castle and get up here into the studio. So we're hoping he's going to be here in time for the next record. But for the moment, we've got a great show coming up. All sorts of stuff that I can't possibly tell listeners about yet, because Buxton isn't here to sort of have his say on them. So let's just go to the next record and keep our fingers crossed. Here is Echo and the Bunnymen with Bring on the Dancing Horses. It's Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. That was Echo and the Bunnymen with Bring on the Dancing Horses. This is Joe presenting solo for the moment because Adam hasn't got here yet. And we've got bad news, listeners. He's been arrested on the way for having a big bushy beard. A big black bushy beard. He was mistaken for a terrorist, and his car was stopped by the police, and now we're going to join him live in prison. Hello, Adam.
Hello.
It's not a very good story, is it?
No.
That's all lies, listeners. Terrible BBC lies.
Why would I be talking like that?
He's
in
here.
Prison?
It's fine. He got here.
I'm fine. I wasn't arrested. What happened was I had to hire a car because I'm moving house at the moment. It's a very long process. I'm doing it in stages. If you move, like, when you're 18, it takes an afternoon. You get a friend to help you, comes around with the van or whatever, and it's not a problem. And that's the case right through your 20s. But then as soon as you maybe get married or start having children or, you know, build a small ludicrous empire, moving house is a very long process, and you can't just do it in a day. It takes ages and ages, and I'm still doing it like weeks after I began the process.
Let's stick with the arrested story. Do the prison voice again.
Hello.
So I had to hire a car this morning, right, to move a bit more stuff, and I it was dangerous. They gave me an automatic car, right? I didn't know, and they didn't say anything about
they're
that.
They're fun. They're like big bumper cars.
Well, it's a big bumper car, but the brakes on the thing are unbelievable.
Springy.
I mean, it's very sensitive.
Mm.
So the tiniest little...
They need to be.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, because automatics, they're driven by people who think they're at the fun fair.
Right. Like the guy in the automatic.
Is like it, the guy in the band The Automatic.
Is it
exactly.
The drummer who's the demented one in The Automatic?
I don't know.
Anyway, this car is all kitted out to protect a driver against the guy from The Automatic with incredibly sensitive brakes, right? And I had a mirror laid on top of my boxes in the back of the car. And at one point, I just I stopped at a red light, but broke too hard.
The mirror slid. Creating an optical illusion through the rearview mirror. Did it?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Thought you'd driven into an infinite universe of reflections.
What nearly happened was Damien Omen 2 style decapitation scenario.
Damien Omen 2?
Was it?
One?
I'm sure it was the second one, wasn't it? Oh, no. Yeah, no, it was
it's
the second one.
It's one when he gets his head chopped off by a big bit of glass. It's the beginning of number one.
Are you sure?
It?
Can we have that confirmed
it's the beginning
by
of number
our
two.
Film experts? I think it's number two.
I think it's number one.
I think
the beginning of number two, they're trapped in a tomb by a rock fall.
The truck
isn't
rolls
it?
Back.
Isn't that right? I think the truck's... Anyway, our listeners will quickly tell us. They're good on that sort of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, that nearly happened to me.
Wow.
Because of the
Why
brakes.
Why didn't it happen to you?
Well, you would prefer
no,
that,
I'm
wouldn't
saying,
you?
No, I'm saying, why didn't it? What stopped it?
The head post.
The head post.
That's why you have head posts.
Thank God.
Thank goodness for the head post. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. It would just be a gory stump. How would you like to do that with it, like the Joe
That'd
and the
fun.
Gory Stump show?
Be like Adam Buxton from the film Stardust.
Yeah.
Instead of an axe in your head, it would be a big mirror.
What kind of voice would I
neck?
Have then? Just a bubbly...
Yes, the prison voice again.
That would be my gory stump voice. Listen, let's play some music, shall we? And then we can resume normal service on the Adam and Joe radio program here on Six Music. I've got a free choice right now. This is exciting, isn't it? It's like a roller coaster.
It's all happening so quickly.
This is new music, relatively new music. This is from about 2006. And these guys were the favourites on the Steve Lamacq show, I believe. And I don't know if they're re-releasing this or what, but it's a band called Wild Beasts and a track called Brave, Bulging, Buoyant Clairvoyance. I think you'll enjoy this, Joe. This is a kind of very early 80s new wavy sound, but in the style of The Associates. And the guy's got a very kind of over-the-top, operatic quality. And coincidentally, we're going to be playing the new video for this at my video show Bug on Thursday, I think, at the BFI. Sold out, so it's not an advert. You can't come. Sorry, sold out. There is another one, though, the week after.
God, so play the record.
Here's Wild Beasts with Brave, Bulging, Buoyant Clairvoyance. Well done. That's Wild Beasts with Brave, Bulging, Buoyant Clairvoyance. And they're re-releasing that as a single in October.
They're talking about, what's that astrologer's name, Russell?
Russell Brand.
No, Russell...
Harty. Russell Girth.
Grant. That's what they're talking about. Russell Grant, and he's on the ferry to France.
Yeah.
And they get in trouble, and he jumps into the sea, and he's very brave. And buoyant.
And he's bulging.
And he floats, and all the other passengers cling on to his jeans.
Yeah.
And he saves their lives.
And he's a brave, bulging, buoyant, clairvoyant.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what that song's about.
Wild Beasts are from Kendal, which is the home of Kendal
Mint Cake.
Felicity Kendal, Kenneth Kendal. And that's it.
Wendell Kendal. Hey, listen, Kendal. The answer to our quandary earlier about the Omen is that I was right. It is Omen 1 where it's David Warner gets his head chopped off. Thanks to the three or four people that texted in about that.
Nerd.
Damien Omen 2, one of my favourite ever horror films.
It's a smash, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's one of the most underrated sequels. I've got a theory that it's better than the first film.
He's under the ice in number 2, isn't he? Or is that number 1?
No, his brother goes under the ice.
That is an absolutely horrific
scene. Is his brother,
scene,
or is it him? No, whoever goes under the ice dies. I think it's just a random kid.
It's one of his mates, isn't it? And he goes under the ice there. And they're all racing
around. During a hockey match.
And he starts sliding along.
It's terrific.
Under the ice.
It's got an excellent lift accident. It's got terrific death by crows.
You know,
bravo.
Well done.
Bravo. And a squash by a truck. Pecked to death by crows, then squashed by a truck. Bravo.
He's got trapped under the ice.
I'm going to the toilet for 3 minutes.
Sir.
I want another killing as soon as I get
He's
back.
He's sliding along under the ice there. There's no retrieving that fella. Well done, sir.
Breathe. He's trapped. It's awful. Brilliant.
Off he goes. Well, that's horrific. Well done, sir. here's a little Guy Garvey trail for you. He won the Mercury Prize this week. Did you watch that?
He did. It was inevitable, really, wasn't it?
You reckon?
Well, the Garvey bandwagon has been snowballing for a while in terms of his mystique and persona.
Mixing your metaphors there a little bit, mate.
Well, I like to mix my metaphors.
Bandwagon
for
snowballing
on a Saturday. It's very healthy.
Let's hear Garvey in his trail.
Yes, I don't understand that music personally.
That was three 6-year-olds from Northampton, and they're called Wicket, Woffit, and Wobble. And that's their new single.
That's exciting stuff.
No, that's the Beastie Boys.
Oh. It's not so exciting then.
No.
This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. You know what? You know who I miss?
Who do you miss?
Salty.
Salty, the
it's
salt
just
man.
Not the same without the
sea
salt.
Sea salt.
Man.
It was nice. It was comforting having him sat there.
Oh, he was impressed.
Yeah.
He thought what we were doing was worth something.
That's right.
He seemed nervous even.
He was the same age as us even.
He was the same age as us. Oh, I miss him. I wish he'd come back.
Yeah.
He just had a laid-back presence that really lifted the show, I thought.
He could have been our Carl Perkins. What's he called?
Pilkington.
Pilkington. Carl Perkins. Do a bit of rock and roll.
He could have been our Carl Perkins.
He could have been our Carl Perkins, couldn't he? With his blue suede shoes. But no, he had to go back to his Lego shop and carry on with his life.
It's very sad. He has, however, put up some photos of the stuff that we gave him on Flickr.
Yeah,
so there's some nice pictures of the Santa Claus and Goal, and he's arranged them very nicely and taken a photo.
Do you think he's watched any of them?
And someone has put beneath the photo on Flickr quite a rude comment, like, what is this photo doing on Flickr? Get it off. And Chris has replied very calmly and intelligently.
Yeah, as is his wont.
This is a photo that I have taken of things that I own that people have asked to see, therefore I have posted it.
There's no rattling the salt man.
There's no, the salt, he is unrattleable.
Yeah.
Like, he's so firmly attached to the ground.
Salty can't be shaken.
No.
Where am I going with this?
No, I don't know. He's got some soggy salt blocking his holes.
Somewhere bad. But is that the first guest we've ever had?
I think so. The first and last.
First and last.
The only guest ever. There might be some kind of plaque put up on Chris's face.
What if there were special circumstances? What if someone really famous wanted to come on this show?
It would depend who they were.
Right.
We'd have to vet them. They'd have to fit certain criteria.
Would we throw it open to the listeners?
To let them decide whether the person would come or not?
Yeah, to let them decide whether they were worthy.
I think we certainly would.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because we respect our listeners.
We do, don't we?
They're used to a certain type of rubbish. We don't want to confuse them.
Give them new
by
rubbish.
Bringing foreign elements into the trash pile.
Right now, it is 9:30 on BBC Six Music, and it's time for the news, read by Nikki Cox.
I'm realising I've never done that dance.
What dance?
Well, presumably you're supposed to freeze...
And then
rock. And then freeze. You know?
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
No.
Oh, I bet that's fun.
I must have done that, surely. Mm. No. I haven't done that. The only dance I've done is the... You know, I did the rowing one.
There aren't enough dances around anymore, are there? There used to be, like, a single along every few months that had a special dance.
At my school, when I was 11, they had a pop dancing class.
No.
And so we went along, and the first dance... I only went to one, I think. But the first dance class I went to, they taught you how to do the Prince Charming dance.
I know how to do that dance.
Yeah.
It's the crossed arms at the front, isn't
crossed
it?
Crossed arms.
And then it's one arm...
Raise your one arm.
One fist over the head,
that's
the other
right.
fist over the head.
And then you lay one hand down by your side. But you're moving forward all the time
yes,
as well.
Yes, you're advancing.
Exactly. And
with who was it? Diana Dawes? Who
yes,
was it?
Yes, it was Diana Dawes.
Yeah, at the front there.
Yeah. So that was a good one. It was a great thing to do because all the girls were at the class, you know?
Really?
And they were doing the Prince Charming dance.
Sounds
no need
charming.
For you to do like a little fruity cough.
I'm clearing my throat because there are girls in the conversation.
11-year-old girls.
11-year-old girls have arrived in the conversation.
Time for fruity cough. Okay. Now, listen, we just got an email, or so Joe reckons, from someone who is getting married.
Yeah, let me take you through this properly. Here we go. This is an email from somebody called Emma Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that she and her family are fans of the show, and they're having a wedding soon, and they're putting their playlist together for their wedding.
They're not fans now after the fruity cough.
No. But they're missing a song for their first dance.
Right.
And Emma says, can you help us? Any suggestions? We don't really have an hour song.
So she's thinking...
Well, she's listed all the records they've got for the disco.
Right.
After the wedding. Bit of Robert Palmer, some Mix-a-Lot. It's a very good lineup. Texas Midnight Runners.
Mm-hmm.
Some Loggins is in there.
Which Loggins?
Kenneth Loggins. with Footloose.
Well, there's only one Loggins, isn't it? It's not going to be obscure Loggins, is it? For the wedding.
It could be Rupert Loggins. But he
Loggins.
Hasn't secured a record deal.
Yeah, but a Loggins album track or something.
Christina Aguilera and friends with Lady Marmalade.
Oh,
all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Don't oh please her.
Oh, please.
I think it's a brilliant... you know, weddings, all bets are off.
Please. What's wrong with the original? You don't need Aguilera.
Oh, you do. There's warbling and it's sexy for the kids.
Oh, please. So she's thinking maybe we could suggest like a real song. But we were thinking
Emma, or indeed maybe Emma doesn't want this, but it made us come up with an idea, which is for Song Wars, which sadly isn't happening this week, but might happen in the next few weeks. For Song Wars, if you're having a wedding, would you like us to write the song for your first dance? So this is the deal. If you want us to write the first dance song for your wedding, email us. Emma, I'm afraid you're going to have to email again because we don't want to foist this on you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'd like the person who agrees to this to enter into a binding, solemnly sworn contractual oath.
Yeah, much like the marriage vow itself.
Yeah, that they promise to play the winning song at their wedding and dance to it as their first dance. And we're going to need video
evidence
mm-hmm. sent to us. We might even send Salt Man out there.
The Salt Man.
To monitor it.
You're assuming that he would be up
for it. We haven't told the Salt Man about this. But he has been employed on the show without knowing.
He'd be a good correspondent, wouldn't he?
Yeah, anyway, no. But we definitely need video evidence that this song was actually used as the first dance. And we would, as our part of the contract, we would promise to try our damnedest to make a song that will go down really well.
Yeah.
At the wedding. Because we know the vast majority of the people at the wedding won't know what Song Wars is or what these noises are. So we'd try and really make it welcoming.
Yeah, all they would have to say, they wouldn't have to explain like, oh, they're these guys on Six Music. It's a digital station. You need a DAB radio. They wouldn't have to go through all that.
That might be in the song.
Yeah. They would just, all they would say is, you know, we've had a song specially composed for Martine and Chris or whoever it happens to be. And here it is. And then the guests would be confused for 2.5 minutes.
But you would have to dance during that period of confusion. We might, I'm not promising anything, but there might be a special dance that comes with the song. Prince Charming style.
Yeah.
You might get a sheet of instructions.
Okay, so what do people need to do? Do they...
Well,
they
just email us. The email address is, what is it? adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. This might not happen for a few weeks because it's a big... You know, we need to make these songs really good. But if you're getting married and you'd be prepared to enter into that deal, then please email us.
Yeah, and let us know salient facts. We would need facts about you and your spouse to construct the song.
Yes, information, so it can be personalised.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what about Emma Spencer, who sent in this email? And that's sort of what she's hinting at.
And we also need the date of the wedding as well.
Yep, absolutely. It needs to be not immediately, right? It needs to be in a couple of months.
Do we want an invitation? Not really.
Well,
no.
Let's wait till the details come through.
Yeah.
We'll see what it's going to be like.
I don't really need an invitation.
Really?
No, I don't really
want... What if the Sultan of Brunei or Steve Jones?
That's different.
Well, exactly. Then do hedge your bets.
Hedge your bets.
Hedge the bets.
I'm going to hedge. Start
Pop
hedging
the bets in the hedge.
I didn't even think about
Does Emma Spencer have special dibs though? Because she's sent in this email with this idea on it. Does she get? What if she just emails back and says, "Well, that's what I was saying. How dare you take my idea?"
Well, that's
and
fine.
Then throw it open.
We
to
just
the
need
listeners.
Some facts in that case, Emma. And
but then there's no point in anyone else asking.
Yeah, but if we're gonna look through the other entrants, we'll put Emma at the top of the pile.
Right. So she will have a special extra edge.
She's got,
but it might be overpowered by other emails,
especially if they're from Steve Jones, and he's gonna fly us
or the Sultan of Brunei.
Yeah, both of them. Like if Steve Jones was marrying the Sultan of Brunei,
it's possible.
Wow. That is a wedding that I would like to go to. Now, here is a little slice of...
Hey, speaking of, this is the last Shadow Puppets, right? Mm. Did you watch the Mercury Music Prize last night?
Bits of it.
Bits of it. I watched the opening sequence. It was a montage of hobnobbing at tables. And there was a tiny little clip of Alex Turner kissing... What's her name?
Chung.
I felt... it made me so angry. they looked in each other's eyes and then she just kissed him on the lips. It just made me furious.
He's a good-looking, tall, very talented man. I wouldn't worry about
it. I'm taller than him. Taller than me.
He's very tall.
Is he?
Yeah. I know what you mean, because at first when I found out they were going out, I thought, that's outrageous. Just because he's in a band.
He's spotty.
He's a little spotty weasel man. He's not, though.
She should be going out with me.
I saw him at Glastonbury. He's not a spotty weasel man.
Alexa Chung, what are you doing?
What are you doing, Chung?
He can't kiss. I'd kiss you.
Okay. Here's the age of the understatement from The Last Shadow Puppets. That's good stuff, isn't it? Little Scott Walker-esque
terrific
jaunt there from The Last Shadow Puppets. Joe's romantic rivals for the affections of the beautiful Alexa Chung.
It's only a matter of time.
What are you thinking about?
Before I go home.
She does like older men, though, apparently.
Does she?
Apparently.
Well, I'm very old.
Yeah.
So I'm bound to be in with a chance.
Have you got an amazing, not just one, but two amazing bands that everybody loves?
Yeah, kind of.
Have you?
Yeah, I do.
What are they called?
Joe Cornish and his songs is one of them. And then there's another one called Night Flyer. That you don't know about.
What's the name?
It's a rock band. I play in pubs.
Have you got an album?
In the north of England, yeah.
What's the Night Flyers album?
It's called Rocket. By the Night Flyers, we're not doing very well.
Okay.
Listen, it's free play time, listeners, and this free play has a story behind it because Last week, you might remember that a listener designed some T-shirts based on the Text the Nation we did a few months ago about silly T-shirt slogans.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one which was Alan Sugar. You know the deal with a jazz cigarette and saying instead of you're fired, saying you're fried. And someone printed that up as a proper T-shirt.
I notice he didn't print up Take Me to Your Lido.
No. It's weird, isn't
it? It's a little bit hurtful, isn't it, with an alien.
Well, maybe now. Someone else will.
Alien with a swimming costume on and a towel over his...
It was more family-friendly, wasn't it?
Alien shoulder.
But he didn't do that.
No.
He just did your fried. And he sent in a T-shirt each to Adam and I. We were going to put photos of ourselves up on the website wearing it, which we'll try and do this week.
Yeah,
we forgot to do it last week.
We forgot to do it. I brought it in this week, though. I've only got mine. Joe forgot his, so we'll get Joe dressed up in it, seeing as he thought of the phrase, and take a lovely picture of him with no undies.
It's going to be lovely. Really, no undies?
No undies.
Really? Well, that's something to look forward to. But anyway, as part of the deal, he said, look, here are these T-shirts, but I'd like you, in return, to play some fusion.
Mm.
Do you know what fusion music is,
It's a
Adam?
Fusion of jazz and funk, is it not?
Yeah. It's like fusion cuisine.
Right.
Only musical.
It's very dangerous, though. You should never attempt the fusion of jazz and funk.
Yes, it's true. And you should certainly do it in a hermetically sealed clinical environment.
It's one of the things they're doing with the Super Collider, is it not? They're trying to...
Mixing jazz and funk. Propelling jazz and funk at high speeds
towards each other.
A circular tube.
Yeah.
Towards each other, yeah. And
it's very dangerous.
It's being manned by Joe Zwienal and Jaco Pastorius.
It's very dangerous because a huge funky hole could open up and suck everything into it.
Mm.
And at the very center of that hole would be Craig Charles. Grooving.
That's true. Well, I don't remember the name of this man who sent the T-shirts in, but he's put one up on eBay as well. If you search on eBay under... No, we can't say, can we? Because it's promoting his website. But there's one on the eBay for sale. Anyway, so he asked for some fusion. I don't know that much about fusion.
Come on,
but I don't know that much. All I know is Weather Report. Are they even proper fusion?
I wouldn't know. Actually, we'd have to ask. What's his name? Julian Barrett.
Right.
He's the expert.
I think this is fairly mainstream when it comes to fusion, and, you know, they're not fusing that much.
No.
Just a little bit of fusing. But so I chose a Weather Report track for the T-shirt, the nameless T-shirt gentleman. It's called Barbary Coast. It's off the album Black Market.
Oh, it's a smash.
It's a sort of quite an accessible track for you non-jazz fans, because it's... You could play it now, please, Claire. Activate the track. It's a sort of a choo-choo train.
It's like Pet Sounds.
Turn it up a bit. So you have to imagine you're chugging along the coast of Africa, the Barbary Coast, in this lovely old train. And now the fusion men are going to interpret the atmosphere on the train.
Craig Charles.
With the use of jazz funk.
Waving his flag.
All aboard!
Lovely stuff. There you go.
Something else that isn't going his way.
Placebo with Teenage Angst. That was a live session track, and it went on for another 25 minutes. So we had to cut it short there, unfortunately, Placebo fans. That was recorded for Gideon Co. in October 2004 here at the Hub at BBC Six Music. And there's still a little greasy stain where where Molko sat and sang that song. And it's got a gold frame around it now. And you can come and see it. You can pay £6 and...
Lies.
Have a look at that. It's all lies.
Scandalous lies.
It's all untrue. That was a good bit of jazz funk before there.
Wasn't it good?
Enjoyable.
I do recommend Weather Report. If you like the sound of that, they're really good. You could go out and buy the album Heavy Weather or Black Market or Sportin' Life.
Sportin' Life is a good one,
and you certainly wouldn't go wrong. You've got to be used to people doo-wopping along to the main melody line.
Mm.
It's quite blended in with Weather Report.
Who are the main players in Weather Report?
Well, the classic lineup was, of course, Zwienal on keyboards.
Who played with Talking Heads. Oh, no, he inspired a song by Talking
Heads.
Did he?
Yeah. Joe Zwienal.
Called Zwienal.
Of course, Jaco Pastorius on bass,
mm-hmm.
The late, great Jaco Pastorius.
The tragic genius.
He's got an amazing solo album.
Yeah.
He's one of the world's greatest ever bass players.
With the moody black and white photo of him on the front.
Yeah. He was tragically killed in a robbery years and years, years ago.
He was mugged in a car park or
something. Something really hideous.
Rubbish.
And he was a genius. And, you know, Wayne Shorter on the sax.
Yeah.
Those are pretty much the names I know. They all played for Sting. on Dream of the Blue Turtles. Was it? It was one of those albums. Sting just hired as many of Weather Report as he could.
Yeah.
And got them to play on one of his albums. I think it was Dream of the Blue Turtles or one of those. Maybe,
it was
maybe
definitely
the following one.
Yeah, it was Dream
and
of the Blue
Turtles.
And
there was a video. Do you remember there was like a video of them recording it?
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I forget what that film was called. It also included the birth of Sting's daughter or son.
Yes.
It had a whole Trudy Styler birth scene in it. Really quite gory. And and also scenes of him bickering with Weather Report.
Right.
Who were being obviously very handsomely rewarded for playing on this Sting album, but were being bossed around by Sting. And I think there's a bit where they don't take it anymore.
Yeah.
They start teasing Sting. So it's the Sting versus Weather Report standoff.
Maybe it's been withdrawn by Stung.
Maybe. Like George Lucas.
He's had it banned.
Withdrawing the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah, exactly. Or the Rolling Stones getting rid of Cocksucker Blues.
Yeah.
Wow.
But listen, listeners, that's Jazz Funk News. I should update people on Kylie the Kitten.
Yes, please do.
Because last week we were discussing the fact that a kitten turned up at my back door looking very ill. Just before the show, I saw it the night before and it had misty eyes and it was very thin. Then we thought it might go home. The next morning it was there again and it was coughing and spluttering. So I was hoping when I rushed home after the show that it would still be there and I could take it to the vet. I'm sorry to say it didn't. I haven't seen it again.
Well, the player's gone back to the game.
Is that the Dr. Dre's veterinarian?
That's what's
assessment.
Happened. Absolutely.
It really has caused me quite an emotional week.
I'm sure it's fine.
For the first 3 or 4 days, I've been out there trying to call for it.
That's nature's wonderful mechanism.
Macy, my other cat, who was hissing and growling at this kitten, trying to get it away from her territory, has been looking extra pleased this week.
Right.
And I don't know, I just pray that the kitten's been found by somebody.
Maybe Macy ate it.
Do they eat other... Yeah, they do eat other animals. Do cats eat each other?
Probably, they're capable of anything.
Probably.
They're very wily.
They are, aren't they?
Yes, yeah.
So anyway, it's not very good news, is it?
No, that's sad.
But so hopefully it's been rescued by someone, but I have a terrible feeling it might have just crawled off and slipped this mortal coil.
No. They're very resilient cats, they always land on their feet.
Didn't look very well.
You reckon?
Didn't sound very well.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
That's sad.
There we go.
Man.
I did all I could.
Yeah.
Should I have not come on the show? Should I have just not turned up on the show and saved the kitten instead?
Today? Last week, you mean?
What I'm saying is I might have, you know, sacrificed the life of a kitten for the sake of last Saturday's show. And my question is, was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You think this show's worth more than the life of a kitten?
It was a good show.
Why are you wearing one furry slipper on your left foot?
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Okay.
Anyway, very sad.
It's the top of hour right now.
It's not very sad. It might be great. It might have been rescued.
It's fine. Don't worry, listeners.
It's fine.
Cat's absolutely
fine.
It's time for the top of our sweeper. Very exciting. And then we're going to have some vintage late period Talking Heads. Enjoy.
That's great. That's the Talking Heads with Wild, Wild Life. What album was that from?
That was from True Stories.
Yeah. Good album.
It was, it's sort of considered to be their worst, isn't it?
Good album.
I like it, though.
I like it.
I was
excited when it came out.
Nice thing. That's a good video as well.
1924.
Where they're all dressing up as other pop stars. You don't often get that, do you?
Right. Is that clips from the film?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
But because, you know, pop stars want to maintain their own integrity. They wouldn't want to start being as ironic as to just dress up as other pop
Not
stars.
Not the heads.
But the heads didn't care.
That's their stock in trade.
They love to throw caution to the wind. Their new Brian Eno and David Byrne's new album is out. And it's good, man. It's really nice. It's a tune fest. It's not exactly as experimental as Bush of Ghosts, which, of course, was the seminal collaboration between the two. But still, it's very enjoyable stuff. This is Adam and John here on BBC Six Music. We care about music, yeah? We care about it. Is that like a crime? Yeah? We love to talk about it. We love to play it. Love to think about it. I'm going to think about it right now.
Here's a jingle.
I'm thinking about some obscure German prog.
Quick jingle.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Can I just say, before we get into Text the Nation, while I remember, nice email from Jez Simmons. And
text.
Text from Jez Simmons reminding us that, and he wrote a book, I think, called Encyclopedia of Dead Rock Stars, and he reminded us that Jaco Pastorius was not just killed by a mugger, but a bouncer who was refusing him entry into a club. What a way to go. That is
ridiculous,
isn't it? Thanks for your text there, Jez.
Cheers, Jez.
Now, Text the Nation this week.
Yes. Now, we've had a couple of emails in which conveniently feed into the idea of Text the Nation. Here is one from Hugh Overend. It says, one question I would very much like answered is this. On a previous podcast from years gone by, I remember Joe saying that the film Revolver was hyped as being Guy Ritchie back to his brilliant best. Yet Rock and Roller, the new Guy Ritchie film, has also been hyped as Ritchie returns to diamond form. Does this indicate that his diamond form is greater than his brilliant best, or does nothing top his brilliant best? Or have they just reused the same quote? So that's one Rock and Roller request, and I noticed that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Both films have been Ritchie back to his best.
Well,
which can only mean that he was so sort of incapable before that it's amazing that not only has he done one reasonably coherent film. Actually, Revolver wasn't even reasonably coherent.
Oh, is that the one you were referring to as reasonably coherent?
Well, that's the first one that's back to his brilliant best, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right, right.
Well done, because Swept Away, which was the one before that, it was as if he was just incapable of anything.
I mean, really. That's a nadir not just for Ritchie, but for the whole of the film industry.
For the world. A global nadir for Madonna, the film industry, just for humanity as a whole.
Yeah, but it is a thing that happens, isn't it? It's like when an artist of any stature troughs so dramatically, everything they do thereafter
is then a return to form. Yeah, but the lower they trough, the more return to forms they can have.
That's right.
Because with Ritchie, we just assume it's going to be a stinker.
All they have to do is turn up and everyone's like, oh, it's a well return done. To form.
He's walking again. Brilliant. Is he holding down his food? Well done.
That happens with Bowie and REM a lot.
Right.
You know, it's always, oh, it's a return to form.
There's another email from Karen DeFranco, who says, why have there been no Guy Ritchie Rock and Roller based critiques? I've been waiting for Joe to launch into a spleen venting diatribe. Have you been gagged by the Beeb?
Johnny Spleen. I want to vent some spleen.
Right.
That's
Guy
what he's
Ritchie.
Like. Kicks open the door. I'm going to vent some spleen today.
Well, neither of us have seen Rock and Roller. I know two people who've seen it.
Uh-huh.
And this is an entirely random poll. It doesn't reflect our opinion or the BBC's opinion of Guy Ritchie's return to form. But mm-hmm. both people I know who've seen it couldn't make it beyond minute 40.
Really?
And they left. Something happens at minute 40 that's apparently, either it's just, you know, a snowballing misery or something happens that makes you leave.
Mm.
The cinema.
It goes on.
I think by the time he's introduced the 63rd colourful character,
yes,
most people's brains just collapse. So anyway, to get to the point, Text the Nation this week is a request for you to invent new ideas for films for Guy Ritchie and new characters and plots.
Right. So you can basically come up with any element, do you not think? Like, ideas that he can use in films.
Yes, he's looking for ideas.
Yeah.
Now, don't make them new in any way, because remember, Ritchie likes to do the same kind of thing. He gets scared if he's out of the context of London gangland. So we're looking for Runyon-esque, colourful characters, right? And we're looking for snazzy titles, and we're looking for plots. They don't really have plots. I guess it's a sort
of MacGuffin.
What are
you talking about? Yes, exactly.
It's a MacGuffin, which is, you know, the word for the object that everyone's after in a story.
He loves MacGuffins.
Yeah, in Rock and Roller, it's a painting that's never revealed. Am I correct in saying? I think it's an artwork that you never see. Which is always the cleverest thing to do with a MacGuffin. You make it, you keep it off camera, like in Pulp Fiction.
Right.
And Repo Man and that sort of thing.
In Lock, Stock, it was, of course, the vintage shotgun, was it not?
Was it?
Insane?
My memory is fading of that one.
I can't remember that. I need to rewatch that one.
You do. I don't. You do.
I need to go home and rewatch Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels immediately. Have you got any ideas to get people started there, Joe? I've got a few things.
Yeah, I've got some characters, some ideas for characters.
It's an enjoyable thing to do, isn't it, to think of characters?
Yeah, yes.
For Guy Ritchie films.
I've got one called Three Hands Rog.
Oh.
Yeah, can you guess what the thing about him is?
He's got three actual hands.
That's correct. He's got two hands on his right hand. Oh, it's Three Hands Rog. There is no more to him than that.
Yeah.
Zero. That's it. I've got one called... Oh, well, you do one.
I've got Billy the Kettle.
Nice.
He's got a whistle that he blows when he gets hot.
That's really good. It's Billy the Kettle. Why is he called Billy the Kettle?
You'll see.
He's got a whistle. You'll know when he's angry, he blows his whistle.
You wouldn't give it away in the dialogue.
Would you not?
Yes, you would. And then you'd see it. And then you'd say it again.
Also, I've got some casting suggestions.
Oh. Can I not give you one more character before we get on to... Have you got a casting suggestion for...
I don't for Billy the Kettle.
What's his name? Kenny the Kettle? Billy the Kettle, yeah. Okay, well, I've got an idea for a character called Purple.
Purple, nice.
Purple. Do you know why he's called Purple?
Because he likes purple.
No, he is purple.
He's purple. Like a grape.
Yeah, that's purple. Right. That's it.
Yeah.
It's never explained.
It's never purple. Explained why he's purple.
Why is he called Purple? Well, he's purple.
Yeah. Freeze frame of purple.
Yeah, purple.
Little purple words come up in wobbly writing underneath. And off he goes, purple. And maybe it turns out that he fell into some dye or something.
No.
He wouldn't explain.
He's just purple.
He's just purple.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got Freddy Jedi.
I like it.
He walks around in a Ben Kenobi-style robe, and he talks about Star Wars and the Force a lot.
Freddy Jedi, that's good.
Freddy Jedi, played by Dexter Fletcher.
That's very good, because the sort of talking ironically about Star Wars in movies, it's about time that Richie jumped on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
I mean, what's it been, 15 years?
Come on, catch up. Freddy Jedi.
This is very mean. We're just being silly. Oh, are we? I've got an idea for another character.
He's allowed to do it. We are too, surely.
Yeah, but he's actually going to the length of making films.
Wow.
Whereas just sitting in an air-conditioned studio and...
Being smug.
Being smug.
Come on, let's go.
Anyway, let's put that thought aside for the moment and focus on the object of the exercise. I've got another idea for a character, Mr. Tickle.
Mm-hmm. Is he actually one of the Mr. Men?
Well, if we could do the rights, yeah, that would be really good, don't you think?
That he turns up,
in a shop. What's Cockney rhyming slang for suit? Whistle and stick.
Jimmy Toot.
Flute, that's right.
Flute.
And the deal with him is Mr. Tickle, is he tickles people to death.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be quite horrific. Have you ever seen that in a film? Someone being tickled to death? Do you remember as a child when you used to get tickled and you would hyperventilate and think, oh my God, I'm going to suffocate.
It's not pleasurable.
It used to be quite, no, there is a line when tickling becomes horrible. Yeah. We're not encouraging children to do that. It's a very, very bad thing, but most people will remember that feeling.
That's a good idea.
Why not put that in a film?
Very good idea.
Yeah?
Mm. How about this?
Mm.
Point out O'Reilly. He's an old, and they just call him Point Out.
Point Out. Oh, Point Out.
And he's an old Irish bloke and he keeps pointing things out to people.
That's it.
And he's played by Martin McDonagh from In Bruges.
Ah, you love that film.
I love that film. But he probably won't do it because he's a good actor. So, Patrick Keelty.
Right. That would be good. Interesting casting.
Let's point out O'Reilly. Look at that thing over there. That's what he'd be like. And he'd wander around and he'd have a little trilby. He'd be a grotesque caricature of an Irish person. Oh, look at that. Oh, it's got mud all over the tyres there.
So, some strong ideas to get you started there, listeners.
Let's point out O'Reilly. He's always pointing things out.
Is 64046. That's 64046. Text in your ideas. And we're not just looking for characters. In a second, we'll give you some ideas for some titles.
Yeah.
Snatch, Rock and Roller, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. He's got an ear for a good title.
Uh-huh.
So, we've got to see if we can provide him with a new one.
Look at that sign!
That's Point Out, isn't it?
That's Point Out.
I'm getting the hang of it.
He's always pointing things out.
So please get your texts coming in.
Here's the Isley Brothers with That Lady. Can't do a good little waka waka. That's the Isley Brothers.
Hang on, is this a fade out or are they just going to lose interest?
They've been grooving for about 4 minutes now. I don't want to stop grooving unless we...
They're starting again.
They are never going to stop.
They're
grooving,
incorrigible.
That Lady. Look at That Lady. Let's point out. That was very good, wasn't it? Did you happen to see Stevie Wonder on Jonathan Ross's show last night?
I tuned in at the end and I saw the spectacle of Jonathan on drums. But thank God they appeared to have turned the sound down on his drums. Because he was bashing away fairly rhythmically, but it sounded as if he was doing a kind of amateur solo over the whole song.
He looked a little bit self-conscious.
He did, but they turned it down, which made the whole thing, made him look quite silly.
It's fair enough, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, what's he going to do? Refuse to play drums with Stevie Wonder?
Did Stevie Wonder ask him to play the drums?
Yeah, I think they'd set it up because Stevie Wonder gets his son, who's called something like Ken Rich.
Willie Wonder.
Ken... yeah. and he plays drums at Stevie's shows, and he's only like 12 or something.
Really?
But he's a bit more prodigious as far as the drums go. He's pretty good. So they got Jonathan on to play, but Stevie was, it was more or less like a Stevie Wonder special, that show last night, and quite rightly, because he is a great entertainer. I mean, he sounds amazingly good. You know, he hasn't played like a gig for 10 years or something.
He's been playing in London at the moment, hasn't he?
Right. And he sounds brilliant, like it's exactly like the record, which is what you want, really, from a massive artist, don't you reckon?
Yes.
You go along, you want to see this. I want the songs to sound like they do on the record.
You want the hits?
Yeah.
Sounding like you know them.
And he delivers them unashamedly. There's no grudging kind of, do I have to play Superstition? All right, here we go. He loves it, man. He's rightly proud of his canon, his magnificent canon. Look at my magnificent canon. That's not how he speaks. He's got a really lovely high voice, Stevie Wonder. And he was just rambling about, like, in the way that I am now, in fact, in a kind of nonsensical way, about having some dream where he was speaking to his mother. And it was a weird moment because Jonathan didn't quite know how to react. Do you know what I mean? Like, when someone just starts telling you something nutty, and the audience went quiet as well. Anyway.
Like I'm doing now.
Like everyone's doing now. this is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. Speaking of mothers,
yes.
I was round at my mother's the other day, and we were having a talk about cycling.
Your mother?
My mother.
Sounds rude, doesn't it?
Does it?
Not really.
Not really, just the word mother. She was chatting to me and my brother about cycling and the dangers of cycling in London and that kind of thing. We're both keen cyclists, me and my brother.
Is she worrying about you?
No, she was mainly worrying that, are we behaving properly or are we observing the rules of the road and that kind of thing. She's quite a stickler for that. She doesn't appreciate, she hates cyclists is what it comes down to. She's one of these road users that absolutely loathes and takes any opportunity they can to abuse cyclists. And she told us this unbelievable story that out of the blue, she said, oh, it reminds me, quite a few years ago now, I was driving around London and I was at the lights and this cyclist, well, he shot across the red light and just carried on going. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, was it one of those situations where it wasn't a junction? He was just going across a light. He wasn't endangering other, road users. So it's not the end of the world. It was one of those David Cameron style flautations of the road laws. She said, well, yes, I think it was. But still, I mean, you know, these cyclists, when they jump across a red light, it makes me so furious. And I said, like, why? What's the problem with you if it's not an actual danger to you or anyone else? She's like, well, because they just think they're so great, don't they?
What did she do?
She said, so I chased him in my car. And I got very close to him, and I deliberately swerved right up against him. I was like, you what? That's outrageous.
She hit him.
No, she didn't actually hit him. She said, no, I didn't hit him. I went very, very close to him, though, so he had to swerve, she said, with delight. I was like, you're the worst person in the world, Ma. You are the kind of person that all cyclists hate and loathe, and the kind of person that makes cycling a misery sometimes, you know?
But you know what? They're both in the wrong, of course.
Right, of course, yeah. But I would say my mom was maybe slightly more in the wrong for actually going up and terrorising the guy. And then he chased after her, right? Because he was absolutely, furious. And she'd probably freaked him out. But she was unapologetic about it. And she said, so he chased me for quite some time. And eventually he caught up with me at the lights. And he called me a B-I-T-C-H or something. And waved his hand at me. And off he went.
That's the rudest gesture of all.
Yes, exactly. Shook his fist at me and slammed the bonnet of the car quite hard, and off he went. And then she said, and I felt like I'd quite won the day because I gave him a haughty look.
It's like Hyacinth Bouquet.
She doesn't really speak like that. But off he went, and I gave him quite a haughty look, so I felt I'd won the day. That's a little slice of my ma there.
Oh, my gosh.
She's frightening. So listen, if you see my ma anywhere and you're on a bike, do observe the rules of the road, because she may well mow you down in her car.
It's terrifying.
It is terrifying, isn't it? Let's have... Oh, now, this is a free choice right now, and I've played this track on this show before, but I'm going to play it again because it was requested by the son of a good friend of mine. So, Jesse, hope you enjoy this one. This is Spoon with Don't Make Me a Target. That's Spoon.
Don't make me a
From their excellent album Gar 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 Gar, that's Don't Make Me a Target. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. It's just gone 10:30 and time for the news. Very good stuff. That's Sex on Fire, my lord. Wow. That's the way the Kings of Leon do it. And they were chatting to Steve Lamack, maybe about that and other things. You can hear the show again by going to BBC iPlayer. I always say, well, you can go onto the BBC website and do listen again. You can still do that, right? But the iPlayer is another option. Mm. It's all about the iPlayer.
So many options.
So many.
Peppermint flavour, orange flavour.
Delightful. And don't forget, of course, that you can listen to our show again on the iPlayer. The whole of the show, the whole of the 3 hours with all the music. But there's also the podcast, you know? Don't forget about the podcast. Right?
Yeah. Have you ever listened to that show on Radio 4 that's immediately after us? Obviously, who would turn off Six Music and listen to Radio 4 after this show? Only an idiot like me.
Yeah.
But Armando Iannucci's Charm Offensive.
Yes, yeah.
He goes, he has a kind of bee in his bonnet about the fact that BBC shows spend most of their time telling you how to access them via all these different methods.
Right, right.
He gets him very annoyed. Do you ever listen to that? He gets him very upset and he does lots of good jokes about it.
We don't mention it that much, though, do we?
We don't, no. But it's true, there's so many of them now.
Yeah.
That it almost takes as long to describe them as the length of a show.
Well, you need almost. To, you know, now they've got rid of competitions, you need some...
It's true, some sort of blurble.
...waffle to fill up the programmes, don't you?
So listen again, the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast. But the podcast features a lot of exciting new little nuggets.
That's true.
You got a whole new intro.
There were extra stings by the Salt Man.
Extra stings by the Salty last week. There's brand new stings this week as well that I've created. In fact, I've brought in a sting for you.
No.
Yeah. Very excited about this thing. I created it last night. It's like a cross between a sting and a song from an amazing album.
A stong?
Yeah, do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do want to hear it.
It's all about us. Here we go.
We're just a couple of guys talking to each other. We've been friends since we were young. I am like your brother. And you are like my sister, a shy and scaredy girl. Pale and thin and trembling and frightened of the world. But don't worry, little sister, I'll take care of you. I will laugh at your jokes, I'll help you to the loo. We'll get together once a week and broadcast our conversations. And it will be quite similar to other radio stations, but slightly sloppier.
Well, that's such a mixture of factual information, you know, things that are true and that connect to reality, and then things that don't.
Now, I saw you sigh wearily when the reference to helping you to the loo came up.
No, I just there were images in my head that I'd rather weren't there. Right. That's all. You've made me see things that I can't unsee.
It's like a little mission statement there, and we could play it sort of... I was thinking that we could play it on this show, like, maybe every quarter of an hour, just to remind people, you know, what we do here.
That's a good idea. But no, the truth is you bought that in because that's one you're thinking of not using, right?
Yeah, I was thinking of maybe...
It's good.
Yeah.
I do think, though, it deserves a retort.
Well, yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I don't like being characterised as
shy and scaredy girl.
As a girl.
What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong with girls.
Pale and thin and trembling and frightened of the world.
I'm quite pale. I'm not as thin as I used to be. I am quite frightened of the world.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's half there.
And I do need help in the toilet. A lot of help.
So listen... Let's move on. Let's segue to
okay.
Collins.
Now, last week we were talking about playing some Phil Collins, listeners, and this has set off a flurry. When I say flurry, I mean three emails about Phil Collins. Alistair Bryce says, I was particularly excited to discover Joe's love of certain elements of one Phil Collins album. My hope is that you stay true to your words and play some on the next show. I love Phil. Says Ali Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pro, Phil. Another email says, this is from James White Oldworth.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Collins, is that a threat? The fact that you may play Phil Collins is enough for me and everyone I know not to listen to your show.
Ooh.
Despite having all been fans since your first appearances on Takeover TV, says Jawa, who's an editorial production assistant at Biomed Central.
That's a bit extreme, isn't it?
Editorial production assistant at Biomed Central. What the hell kind of job is that?
So there's a positive and a negative one. But then Maureen Rankine, Rankine says, no, it's with an E on the end, so it must be Rankine, wasn't
Rankine,
it?
That's how you pronounce it.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Is Rankine spelt with an E on the end? The famous Rankine?
I think so, a lot of them.
No.
Are.
See, James is saying no. Rankine, Mo Rankine. If you're going to play Phil Collins, what about the song You Know What I Mean from the album Face Value? It's great. Or, you know, just play Sussudio and be done with it, or don't.
Well, Stephen Merchant played Sussudio the other week, so we were trying to think of something different.
Well, the reason it came up is because you played some Earth, Wind & Fire.
Right.
And I was saying that Earth, Wind & Fire's horn section played on a Phil Collins album.
There you go.
And the track they play on to the greatest effect is this, a bit of middle-of-the-road jazz funk, which I love. I've loved this since it came out. You know, records that you like when you were a kid, and then you start to understand taste and maybe cut some things out of your collection?
Yeah.
This one's never been cut out.
No, this and the Thompson Twins.
Doctors can't remove it.
Are still doing
it. I've had various around. Operations, but it just... It's fused to my bones.
Yeah.
Here is Phil Collins with I Cannot Believe It's True.
Ooh. Ooh. Very nice.
Do you think, you know what, I haven't dared look at the texts since that came on. I've kept the screen on the email screen because I'm assuming there's been, it's probably just disinterest.
A barrage.
But there may have been a barrage of rude emails saying, get this off. Or do
I
you
don't
think someone
so.
Might, do you think anyone might have liked that apart from me?
Definitely. I enjoyed that. I thought that was good. You know, and that lasted, that was about...
It was about 3 or 4 13
hours. 13 minutes, and it felt like only...
If you enjoyed that,
eight.
If there was anyone who knows that song and really enjoyed hearing it, do get in touch.
Yeah, that was good, man. That was enjoyable.
Oh, it's great.
It was punchy stuff. I'd forgotten about that one as well.
He's very good. He's playing the drums on there as well, of course. You're supposed to bring in Mama.
I think
Genesis.
We might have Mama. We might be able to dig it out of the vault
really?
Later on. I don't know if we can make it through the whole of Mama, because that really does.
Can't we just play
minutes,
it now? Because we should focus all this, Collins.
You reckon?
Shouldn't we? I mean, if we spread it across the show, then people
I don't know
are just
if it's
gonna
a good
be put off the whole thing.
Really? Focus Collins. You need a license to focus that much Collins.
To play more than one Collins in any 1 hour period.
I don't know.
Let's leave it for the moment then. We'll come back to it.
I think Claire's called it up there.
Has she?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Should we have a little cheeky listen? Oh, it's a strong
This is
beginning.
Much more serious. It's not as funky. It's political. It's
well,
a political
this is
rhythm.
Genesis, not just Collins on his own. So he's got the whole.
It's the war drums.
Listen to that. That is a statement of intent, isn't
electronic
it?
Electronic shriek of pain.
Oh, I used to love this song, man.
Monks. There's monks.
Scary,
future
deserted
monks.
Warehouse, chains hanging from
Here
the
Here come
ceiling.
The future monks.
Listen to this now.
They worship a god we do not understand. That's the news. The future monks are receiving the news from the planet Zog.
This is good, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
Which bit?
This is exactly what music will be like in the future.
Shh. But I can hardly wait. And a touch. Some of your noises. In the heat and those noises.
It's the wrong noise.
Do the mama noise.
There we go.
That's more like
it. That comes later.
We want to skip to that bit, don't we?
That's the coda. You got to wait for ages for that bit. Can we fast forward?
Here come the drums.
Can't
the serious
forward.
Drums.
Wait for it.
No, it didn't come.
No, it takes ages.
When does it drop?
Probably after the next chorus. Because now he's... Like, it was all minor chords before, but now it's getting a bit more major. He's a master. He's a genius.
Do you think this is him in control of this song? What about Gabriel?
Gabriel wasn't around at this point, you lunatic. No, he was off doing his own thing on Windham Hill or wherever he was.
Really?
Yeah. What was the song that he did? Which Salisbury Hill? No, that was earlier, though, wasn't it? I'm getting all my period, my Genesis periods mixed up. Gabriel was off doing Sledgehammer at this point, I think, and Genesis were a massive, great touring
Behemoth.
Monster Behemoth. Here we go.
It's like Lord of the Rings.
Goblins from the valley.
Nice synth pad.
Are we going to listen to all of this? No, let's... Shall we fade it out? We had a little bit of the coughing there.
That is an extraordinary journey that he's taking you on there. So, not only musically, but psychologically as well.
I don't want to go on the journey. I believe there's been a fire in the tunnel and services have
Freudian
been suspended.
Complications there. Genesis with Mama. Apologies to fans for not playing the entire track there. But maybe another time. Now, we're going to get back to Text the Nation after a trail and some music. But right now, excuse me, here is another trail about the Mercury Awards, is it? Another one, flipping heck, Tucker.
This is the voice of the big British castle. It is the top of the hour. Ooh, that's wonderful. I got so bored with the last hour. I'm glad it's gone. Now here's the new one. It's exciting and it's new. How do you do?
Yes, indeed. This is Adam Buxton here.
Hey, this is Joe Cornish here.
And we're delighted to be with you. It's the final hour of the programme this Saturday afternoon.
Is it really?
It is,
God,
yeah.
That really whistled by, didn't it?
Well, it's amazing what happens when you start playing jazz, funk and Phil Collins.
It's true, isn't it? You know, the Phil Collins did stir up a veritable hornet's nest of techs, but I'm pleased to say they were pretty equally divided between people who really enjoyed it and people who felt it was the most evil, satanic noise they'd ever heard. Somebody saying all the plants died in their house. Someone else whose flatmate may be moving out now that they've walked into the room, hearing that on.
Was that your track
we've destroyed lives.
Mama.
Mama people seem to like, because Mama's just silly, isn't it?
What?
It's powerful and it's epic and it's like a sort of narrative. Yeah, it's like a sort of Muppet record. Whereas my jazz funk one,
Muppet
you know,
record.
It's more divisive.
Now listen, speaking of soft targets, we are having a Guy Ritchie-based Text the Nation this afternoon. Should we have the Jingle Jungle?
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And I would like to say, in defence of Guy Ritchie, you know, first of all, let's preface all these comments by saying that he is a filmmaker, a very successful one at that.
The end. Okay. Did you have more?
None of his films has lost money, although you dispute the fact that maybe Revolver...
Believe that Revolver's in profit. It wasn't even released properly in the States.
I read that none of his films has ever lost money. And that's an impressive thing in the film industry, you know, not something to be sneered at. And he's out there, he's doing it. He's got a little team.
I mean, it's so hard to tell what constitutes the budget. Are you including P&A costs?
What's P&A?
Print and advertising, you know.
Right.
The prints. What kind of costs are you including?
Why is prints involved?
Well, he's involved in the advertising of all films now.
Purple Genius.
Yeah, he sticks them on the front of buses.
The Purple Ponds. He's involved with the advertising of all films.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't realise that. Anyway, so we're asking you to contribute ideas to help Guy Ritchie out, because, you know, a lot of people enjoy knocking him, but let's not forget that a lot of people also enjoy his films.
That's a good angle. We're not knocking him, we're actually helping him.
Yes, exactly.
Because he may well use these ideas.
We're trying to give him a leg up. You know, we don't want Rock and Roller to be his last fun gangster film. We would like it to be just another one.
He is doing Sherlock Holmes, isn't he?
Is he?
Apparently, he's supposed to be doing... There's two Sherlock Holmes films. He's doing one, apparently, with Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
Playing Sherlock Holmes. And then Will Ferrell is doing another one with Sacha Baron Cohen, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. There's Rival. It's going to be War of the Holmeses next year.
Is it? They always come in twos, don't they?
Anyway, so... but maybe he'll use the following ideas in the film after that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he does, it's sure to be a brilliant return to form. Here's idea number one. You're going to play Ritchie now, Adam.
Okay.
And you've got to decide whether to put these in your next script. Here's one from Gary in Loch Lomond. Jimmy Two Shoes. He's a backstreet gangster. He lurks in the shadows. He's always wearing two shoes in a sinister fashion. Now, I'm not sure whether Gary means that he's wearing odd shoes. I assume he doesn't, and he's just saying he's wearing shoes. And his name is Jimmy Two Shoes.
Gary, I like it. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Is that how Guy Ritchie talks?
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's not on the radio.
When he's not hanging out with his mates.
Yeah, he reverts back to this voice.
Yeah. Gary, I think it's a really good idea and I'm going to put it in the film.
You could have a whole film with people called Two Shoes.
Yeah.
Jimmy Two Shoes, Johnny Two Shoes. Anyone with two shoes?
I really like it, Gary. It's a fun idea, and I'm going to use it for the film.
What accent's that? He's turned into your very young son.
Yeah.
Here's one from Nick in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. Welk Willy. He sells ammo in polystyrene cups from his stall in the East End. That's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the climax of the film, the stall gets caught in the crossfire, sending a deadly shower of bullets and mollusks down the street.
I think it's a really good idea. Who's that from?
Nick from Edinburgh.
I really like it, Nick. I'm going to use it in the film.
In the film?
Yes. I've got an idea for a character. Can I tell you
I'm
this one?
I'm not interested in your ideas. It's about the listeners' ideas.
All right.
For a film?
No, for a character. Another idea.
On.
Yentob.
Like Alan?
Right. He believes he's Alan Yentob.
Ah.
Right? And he pretends that he's filming everything for an arts program.
That's good. He thinks he's making Imagine.
And here's the thing. The casting coup, played by Alan Yentob.
No.
Yeah.
But it's not actually Alan Yentob.
The character is not actually Alan Yentob. But it's played by Alan Yentob.
Right.
Because he likes to mix it up with the postmodern, every now and again, Guy Ritchie, doesn't he? I think it's a really good idea. Come on, let's have another idea.
Okay, here's one from an anonymous texter. Film character, Trev Fourwheels, played by Bob Hoskins or Terry Venables. All he says is, get in the motor when doing bank jobs or other naff heists. There's Fourwheels.
I really like
Trev Fourwheels.
It's a very good idea.
Get in the motor. You'd have to have ways to spin that line.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'd be trying to refill his lawnmower with oil. And it would be spilling. Get in the motor!
Right.
So he's talking to the oil.
Exactly. So sometimes it's more serious than others. Sometimes it's a trivial thing, like he's gardening. Other times it's more important to get it in the motor.
You just got to have a spin on the line.
Yeah, I really like it. It's going to go in the film. I think it's a good idea.
Good. Here's another one from Ollie in Battersea. Jimmy the Sweep. Played by Dick Van Dyke. Is he still around? He's quite old, but he's still with us, is he?
Yeah, man. He's got his Doctor series on in the States.
There you go. Dick Van Dyke, who in the guise of a chimney sweep, kills people.
Nice.
The film would be called Soot and would become a West End spin-off.
I like it. I think it's a really good idea.
Jimmy the Sweep is good because he could pop out of chimney places. What do you call them? Fireplaces.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And then kill.
And then, exactly, with his guns blazing. Have we got any ideas?
He probably wouldn't have guns. He'd probably use his thing that he sticks up the chimneys.
His brush.
Yeah.
His bristly brush.
You imagine the rest.
And, up the chimney. Have you got any ideas for titles there?
You know, I did have some last night, but I've forgotten them. But I'll try and think of some new ones.
Here's some ideas I thought of. These are just for titles. I haven't got necessarily plots attached to them yet. Maximum Bosh Wallop.
I like it.
Maximum Bosh Wallop.
Yeah.
Ritchie, back to his brilliant best.
Yeah.
Bosh Wallop. Maximum Bosh Wallop. How about this? Shut it, shoot it, boot it and toot it.
I like that a lot.
Yeah?
Take me through it again.
Shut it, shoot it, boot it and toot it.
Shut it, shoot it, boot it, toot it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Because it's all like little references to sort of drugs and shooting.
Yes, it is.
How about this one? Bob the Snob and the Clobber Job.
Don't know about that one, actually.
It's not so good, is it? It's more like a children's thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Guy Ritchie could spin out into children. That's quite a good idea, that he'd do a series of children's novels based on more sort of soft, simple gangster stuff.
That's a good idea, isn't it? Well, listen, let's have some more ideas after a bit more music. And are we playing the Ting Tings now? Okay, and is this the new single? Sorry, Claire, I should have actually read my sheet, shouldn't I?
Yes.
But I like talking to you, you know? So this is the Ting Tings with Be The One. The Ting Tings with Be The One. This is BBC Six Music. This is Adam and Joe here with you, and we're in the midst of Text the Nation. We're asking you to come up with ideas that might be useful for future Guy Ritchie films.
Yes.
And we've had some very good suggestions. I've got a little plot here for you.
Really? I really want to hear your plot, but I must point out we've had 4 suggestions from the listeners, 7 from me and 15 from you.
I know, okay. Well, let's have some more suggestions from the listeners.
Okay, listeners.
But is this just for characters or other things?
No, it's mainly characters. You're right. We do need some more plot and title ideas. Let's have your plot, man. Let's hear
it. All right, here we go. The title of this film is Jimmel and the Fix-It Fix-Up.
Like it.
Right. An eccentric crime kingpin, played by Jimmy Savile, takes his antique desk to be repaired at Roger's Rock and Roll Repair Shop.
Good.
After it's damaged in a shootout with some 12-year-olds. Mm. Now, Roger is played by Barry from EastEnders. And while it's being repaired by Roger's assistant, Phil, played by David Hasselhoff.
Of course.
Right? Crazy bit of casting there. 20 of Roger's friends come round dressed as Elvis.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, Elvis. Right. No, good, yeah.
And they have an Elvis party. And everyone's having such fun at the Elvis party. They're singing and dancing to Elvis that they don't see a gang of ninja monks led by a beautiful female monk called Poopoolala, played by the Duchess of York, break in and steal the desk because they believe that it contains a holy scroll. Are you following this so far?
Yes.
This is a good plot, isn't it?
This is amazing. I'm dazzled by the cast, though.
Yeah, well, it's a good cast, and it's a good cast. There's a lot of left-field decisions.
Poopoolala.
Poopoolala, she's played by the Duchess of York.
That could be on the soundtrack as well. Isn't that at like a...
Roy Ayers
song, yeah.
Now, Jimmel, right, the Fix-It, the crime kingpin, he's furious with Roger.
Obviously.
Because it turns out that he was hiding some diamonds and drugs in the legs of the table of the desk, right? And he wanted to get the desk out of his house.
The legs of the table of the desk.
Yeah. While his son-in-law, Jimmel's son-in-law, played by Samuel Jackson, who is a local police chief, comes round for tea with his daughter.
Hang on. Can I just point out that he's cool?
He is cool, isn't
Samuel
he?
L. Jackson. He's cool.
This is what I was thinking. So this
caught
is...
a pounder with fries.
Right.
That's his line, isn't it?
Yeah. Film 4. It's got stuff on.
Virgin Broadband. That's the film he's
Barclays
in.
Bank.
He's cool.
Whichever
he's,
bank.
He's the coolest
It
guy.
Was. He's cool. So he would play this police chief that is married to Jimmel's daughter, the crime kingpin's
it's
daughter.
It's getting very complicated.
It is complicated, but that's what you want. In one of the films, Jimmel threatens to kill Roger if he doesn't get the table back, the desk back. Roger enlists the help of the Elvises to track down the ninja monks. Turns out the leader of the ninja monks is Jimmel's daughter, Poopoolala.
You know what? I guessed that.
Daughter, did you?
Yeah, that was obvious. I was going to say at the beginning.
Duchess of York.
Yeah.
Anyway, it goes on a bit like that. So that's an idea. That's Jimmel and the Fix-It Fix-Up.
It's very complicated.
Do you want to hear a little introductory monologue? Here we go, look.
All right.
This chirpy fella's known as Roger the Table. Why? Because he tried to once. As I recall, it was a snooker table. And take it from me, it was the closest he ever came to a hole-in-one. To say he quite likes furniture is a little bit like saying Swept Away was quite a bad film.
That's an in-joke.
This is Roger's repair shop. And over there, that's Phil. But everyone calls him Phil the Hole. Why? Because if he sees so much as a crack in a wall, he gets out his putty and starts filling it. He's got a girlfriend called Polly, but that's another story. Blah, blah, blah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're and very good at that.
Thank you. There'd be some music underneath.
Mm.
You know?
We should really go and see Rock and Roller.
Some Scar. What do you mean? Go and see it.
Yeah.
Well, that's an outrageous suggestion.
Well, listen, I think you've maxed the segment out there.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Oh, no, come on, let's... Oh, okay, let's have some Q-Tip, and then we'll hear some
What Q-Tip is it? Breathe and Stop.
Breathe and Stop.
Has he got a new album out? I read a review of a new Q-Tip album, but now in one of the papers, now I can't find it anywhere.
Hmm.
And I heard a new single from him on the radio, but there's no sign of any activity in the shops.
Well, you're going to have to make do with this vintage tip right here. This is Breathe and Stop.
Q-Tip with Breathe and Stop. I think the deal with his album is that there was an unreleased album called Open that he did a few years ago that wasn't released, that's kind of slightly more experimental, jazzy guitar stuff, and that has been released by some peculiar label.
Right.
It's worth getting. It is quite odd. It's not his usual stuff.
Oh, you've heard it then, yeah.
Yes. But there is some new stuff in the works, I think.
Yeah.
A new album coming up, so that's exciting for me at least. Q-Tip
He's
there.
Amazing.
Now, we should do a little bit of fact-checking here on the Adam and Joe show here on BBC Six Music. We like to get one or two things wrong.
One or two?
To keep you on your toes, as some of you know.
Eight.
More facts are emerging about Jaco Pastorius's tragic passing, the bassist from Weather Report there, and also recorded solo quite a lot. And apparently, it's true that he was killed after an assault by a bouncer, but Dave Sayer has emailed to add that, sadly, Pistorius himself was an alcoholic, apparently, and probably started the fight himself.
That's conjecture, though, isn't it?
That is conjecture coming from Dave Sayer. We're not quite sure what the reality is there. But he also points out that... now, he's saying that no one from Weather Report is on the Sting album, which is Bring on the Night. I was saying that some of Weather Report...
Wynton Marsalis and all that lot.
Well, not the ones that played on Black Market, but Omar Hakim is on there.
Right.
And I think he... Didn't he play on Sporting Life?
I think
he's played with Weather Report.
Now you're asking. Like he nicked a few JBs, didn't he?
Possibly. But anyway, the film's called Bring on the Night, the film with Sting, with
there
Trudy Styler giving birth and Sting having arguments with brilliant jazz musicians who he's kind of bribed to play with him. Bradford Marsalis and Kenny Kirkland are on Bring on the Night as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there's someone from Weather Report on there.
I also said earlier on, I was talking about In Bruges, and I was saying as a casting choice for one of my Guy Ritchie characters, I would go for Martin McDonagh. He was the writer. He's not necessarily an actor. He was the writer of In Bruges, talented playwright. The actor I was thinking of was... I've forgotten his name again.
Who? Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, who also popped up as Mad-Eye Moody in the Harry Potter films.
Yes.
Your favourite franchise.
With the swivelly eye. I do like them.
I love the swivelly eye, man. He's great, Brendan Gleeson. He's amazing. And so, sorry about those erroneous facts there. Now, let's have some... well, we're going to read out a couple of texts for Text the Nation, aren't we?
Now?
Yeah.
Are we?
Are we not?
Okay, sure.
Because I was rambling on about my own ideas last time.
Okay, here's one from Andy Clyde. Remember, we're asking for your suggestions for new characters or titles or plot ideas for the next Guy Ritchie film. Andy Clyde suggests a character called Texter. Texter.
Mm-hmm.
He never speaks. He only ever sends SMS messages to communicate.
I like it. It's a really good idea. I think we're going to have it in the film.
It's very contemporary.
Also, that's a better idea for Dexter Fletcher.
Right.
Yeah.
He could play both parts.
Dexter Fletcher.
He could be a kind of Eddie Murphy kind of character who plays multiple parts in Ritchie films.
Right.
Using prosthetics.
I wonder if he's in Rock and Roller. I'd be sad
he
if
must
he wasn't.
Be. He must be. Alex Cottrell sends an email suggesting a character called Voiceover Vince. A massive, obese, bald cockney who stands just off shot, narrating the action as it happens. The problem is he gets killed halfway through, which causes the film to break down into the normal level of confusion normally demonstrated by Mr. Ritchie's films. Voiceover Vince, is that good? That sounds a bit like that Will Ferrell film.
I like it.
Stranger than Fiction.
It's postmodern. I like it. Yeah. It's going to go into film. Thank you very much,
good.
Ali.
Here's another one from Nick Jones. He's got an idea for a character called Sausage Pete. He's an older cockney with slightly fat fingers, nothing else at all. He says, Nick Jones.
Right.
Yeah.
Sausage, what is...
Sausage Pete.
Sausage Pete. I think it's a really good idea. I'm going to put it into film.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a good one. This is good, from Sepp in Manchester. The Yank.
Mm.
And it's that's a name for an American character.
Right.
Probably played by Steve Buscemi. And he's very out of place in London's East End.
Has he even got one of those in, like, Snatch? Is there someone called The Yank? I mean, that
possibly.
Sounds...
Possibly. That ever since John Wayne made that film, Brannigan.
Right.
Where he comes to London. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
And Danny Cannon did a similar thing in the film Young Americans, didn't he? With
Fish
Harvey
out of
Keitel.
Water, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm.
Love it.
Yeah, but that's no reason why Ritchie wouldn't do it.
I think it's a really good idea. I'm going to put The Yank in for next film. Thanks.
One more? This is from Mark by text. Guy Ritchie character 101. He's a safecracker who only talks in binary code.
Brilliant.
That's good, isn't it?
They've got some characters in Star Trek The Next Generation who only talk in binary code. I forget what they're called, but I think it's a really good idea.
One more. This is a really good one. It's an anonymous text, but a character called The Flutist, a musician who stabs people with a flute. When they're dying, he plays a tune to them. Now, I think that guy's Mr. Trick or Lady, because I think if you, this is horrible, I'm not suggesting you do this, but in a film,
yeah.
If you attack someone with a flute and it penetrated their neck,
exactly.
Then as they were dying,
the
it
dying
would play
gasps.
A tune, and the killer would do a sick dance. La, 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 la.
An insane jig.
People love that kind of thing.
They
the
do.
More horrible, the better.
I think it's a really good idea. I'm going to put it into film.
Now, here's a free play for you after this little Sean Keaveney trail. And this I'd like to dedicate to my mother. It's a bit of Neil Diamond that you'll be hearing in a second. And I'd like to play it by way of an apology for bad-mouthing her about being an insane sort of car killer. and a threat to bicyclists. She's not. She's a lovely woman. And forever in blue jeans, one of Neil
Diamond's.
Will
she be listening today? Does she listen to the
show?
Yeah,
she likes the show. She started listening.
Hey.
Neil Diamond, Forever in Blue Jeans, is one of her favourite songs, one of mine too. So I hope you enjoy it after this Keaveney trail. We appear to have gone somewhat Radio 2 on your ass, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that, but in a very good way, I think. You know, I dare you to not have enjoyed that bit of Neil Diamond there with Forever in Blue Jeans. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. It's just gone 11:30, time now for the news. Oh, that's an absolute smash, isn't it?
Yes.
That's a shouting classic. Monkey Wrench by the Foo Fighters. The most desirable man in rock, Dave Grohl. I'll have a slice, please. Thank you.
I've just been checking the emails. I hadn't looked at them for a while, and we've got a huge amount about Phil Collins.
Right.
It's provoked a thunderstorm.
This is what happens.
Of emails, and it is really quite divided, isn't it, down the middle. Lots of people really liking the sound of the Collins, but people really violently taking against him. I didn't think he'd divide people still.
Well,
I thought maybe people would have, you know, got over that kind of division, you know, or that kind of divisive thinking.
For some people, you know, for maybe lazy thinkers, he's a byword for mediocrity.
Well, there's the famous fact that, of course, he's beloved by hip-hoppers.
Right.
And the urban music community. There's a whole album of covers of Phil Collins' tracks done by very respected R&B artists.
Mm.
So, you know,
he's had more than his fair share of hits. I think maybe he does himself a disservice by being so geezerish, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I mean, you wouldn't want him to take himself more seriously. I don't know what the best way to go is. If I was advising Phil...
There are pop stars that take themselves a lot more seriously than Phil.
Oh, definitely. That's what I'm saying.
I tell you, his problem is he's just not in the public eye anymore. He's not standing up for himself. Where's the sequel to Buster?
Yeah.
Where are his comic relief appearances? He used to be part of the fabric of British life, didn't he? Always turning up on Swap Shop and BBC things all the time.
Well, he's got his own personal life to take care of. His daughter was getting married. I saw some pictures in one of my wife's mags the other day of Collins looking proud and happy and healthy. So, you know, things are going well in Collinsville.
Well, we're sorry if it shocked you, the playing of Collins, listeners, but, you know, you've got to be in it for the long haul if you listen to this show, right? Take the rough with the smooth. There's a lot of rough.
Exactly.
Anyway, theatre news. Adam, you love the theatre.
I absolutely adore the theatre.
When was the last time you went to the theatre, seeing as you love it so much?
Oh, actually, well, I went sort of relatively recently with my son to see the theatre production of Tintin.
Oh, there you go.
That was 2 years ago.
That's relatively recently, isn't it? Two years.
Before that, 15
I went
years.
To the theatre last night.
Oof.
Yes, I went
now,
to
you do love the theatre, because you were seeing Speed the Plough, whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, I did see that one. I like it if it's got a star or amazing stagecraft.
Who did you
I
see
I don't
last
like plays that are just talking in drawing rooms.
So you went to see Wicked at the Apollo Victoria.
I went to see Sue Pollard.
Did you?
In Razzle Dazzle.
Oof.
No, I made that up.
Okay.
No, I went to the National Theatre. Have you heard of the National Theatre?
Yes, I have.
On the South Bank. It's a wonderful place because it kind of sucks all the posh people out of London or all the solidly middle-class people.
Big posh sponge.
I didn't see a single non-white face there.
Really?
Seriously, I looked around in the audience before the lights went down. I saw two non-white people in the whole auditorium. I'm not saying that's a good thing in any
way. How
did
they get it?
That's a bad thing. But it's interesting that it does siphon off a very kind of middle-class section of society is the point I'm making.
Well, it just happens to be to appeal to that section of society.
Yeah. So much so that I was sat down in my seat. I was seeing this play, The War Horse, which is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee you'd love it if you went to see it. It's
got
amazing.
An amazing puppet in it,
it's
hasn't
got
it?
Amazing puppetry.
Yeah.
But I was sitting down, various posh, bumbling, middle-class people were sitting down around me, and a middle-aged man with white hair had almost a little tumble on the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to hold onto the banister to steady himself. And he said, "Oh, Crivens."
Nice.
Yes. I haven't heard that word used in public ever before, I think.
No.
But that speaks of the crowd the National Theatre attracts, doesn't it? Someone using Crivens?
Absolutely.
That should come back.
Criminy.
Criminy Jicket. It was an amazing play, though. It's a sort of classic horsey tale, a bit like The Black Stallion.
Set in the First World War or the Second World War?
Yeah, the First World War. Yeah. It's a little foal that gets bought by a hard-up farmer, and his son sort of brings the foal up. And then it gets sequestered for the army and ends up being a horse in the First World War. You know, or it's like that Bresson film, Oh Hazard Balthazar, yeah?
Oh, I love it.
About the donkey. A movie about an animal that goes through various groups of humans and you get little portraits of the humans and some of them are evil, some of them are nice, but the animal remains aloof and kind of noble through whatever rubbish the humans put them through.
Yes,
it's a bit like that. But the horses are done with the amazing sort of wooden maquette puppets. Is that the right word?
I don't know. A maquette is like a little model.
Yeah, they're like a kind of framework model operated by three people. And it's like,
marionette.
It's a marionette is a puppet with strings.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're more like maquettes, I think. Everything right? Okay. And sorry. And yeah, anyway, it's amazing. And I recommend you see it. They're operated by three people, these horses.
Yeah.
And they're operating the ears and the eyes and the precise reaction to everything on the stage at all time.
And are they just wearing black, like they're standing next to it and operating it, or are they beneath the stage?
They're dressed like, the brilliant thing is they're dressed like animal hands.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like in flat caps and like farm hands. But they never take their eyes off the puppet, so it looks as if they're handling a real animal.
Right.
It looks as if they're just coaxing this real animal through a performance. So real is their operating of the puppet. It's amazing.
Wow.
I nearly had an emotional breakdown about 2 minutes in.
Crivens.
When the foal came out, I so nearly cried my breasts off.
Yeah. That's brilliant, man. I'd love to go and see that.
It's very good.
I'm not allowed in, though, because I'm too street.
Really?
Yeah.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll be down skateboarding around there, but I wouldn't go and see the theatre because that's for the pop.
The Sun should do one of those things where they offer price, like they did with the opera the other week.
Right.
You know? To get real people into the theatre.
Get a wider diversity of cultural tourists in there.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, people are missing out if they're not seeing it, eh? Obviously. I just said that.
Well done.
As a thing to say. Now, this is your choice, Joe, that you've got coming
up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is it going to be?
Well, it's another little... we're not exactly going for the indie classics this week, are we?
Yeah, is this a good idea? But a couple of weeks ago, I was mentioning the Mr. Men, and I sang a bit from Mr. Bump, and someone called John the Third... sent in, burnt off the album for me that I haven't had since I was a kid. Does this mean anything to you, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does it?
Yeah, well, you were talking about it, weren't you?
But did you have the Mr. Men as a kid?
No, I said that my dad strongly disapproved of all the men.
Really?
He hated them. He had an irrational loathing of them. I don't know what his problem was. I think he thought they were just sort of simple-minded or something. And that his children should not be exposed to them. So every time he came in and he caught me, it was like a guilty pleasure. It was like having a little porn mag there. A little Mr. Men book. He'd come in and he'd go, oh, the Mr. Men! That rubbish! I don't know if he'd been like in a fight with... Who was the guy that...
Roger Hargreaves.
Roger Hargreaves and my dad had a dust-up or I don't know what. But he loathed all the men. In the world of the Mr. Land.
Really? Well, then, in that case, this is for him. This is for Nigel Buxton, Bad Dad, and it's, what's it called? Is it called Let's Go to Mr. Land?
Yes.
Yeah, kick it.
I went to Mr. Land to have a look-see. It's a mystery train. Mr. Fields and Mr. Trees. Mr. Birds and Mr. Bees.
It really is a pan.
How long does it go on, Claire?
Another minute.
Another minute. You know what it sounds like, Stackridge? It sounds like a kind of George Martin production. You can imagine Mr. Paul McCartney working on there, don't you think?
Let's go to Mr. Land, the land of magic.
This is sick music, man.
I know.
Yeah?
It's eclectic.
It is eclectic. I forgot.
Thank you very much. John the Third, King John the Third, who sent that to me. Doesn't he rule North Korea? That's King John. I don't know, I get confused, but thanks a lot.
King John
Hill. The people of North Korea.
He's ill in. No, that's very nice of you to burn that off. I'm talking to King John right now. Don't do it again.
Oh, come on, that was good.
It was not really.
It was great.
Not really.
That's what you want on the Saturday morning.
Is
Phil
it?
Collins... And the Mr. Men. It's what the six music listeners are crying out for.
It's the six music formula for success.
It's six music for six-year-olds.
Success. We got another Guy Garvey trail. What? Is it the same one?
Yeah.
You can't play the same trail twice in the same show, surely. That's
something's going wrong there. I mean, it's a fantastic trail for a wonderful guy, and it's great to celebrate his deserved success.
I want to hear it again.
Let's hear it again then. Mercury Prize award-winning stuff there from Elbow and The Bones of You. It's Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. It's pretty much the end of our show.
It is, isn't it? Are we going to have time to wrap up Text the Nation?
Yeah, let's have a couple more just to send it off.
Okay, here's an email that is suggesting the plot for the next Guy Ritchie film. He should do a film about a depressed 40-ish film director called Tarquin, who married a singer who was 10 years older and much more famous than him. They didn't have much in common, and the film director thinks that she only married him so that she could get opportunities to resurrect her failed acting career. He tried to do this, but the film he cast her in was terrible. His career's now in decline and he's not trendy anymore. Radio DJs and comedians take the mickey out of him a lot. He has rows all the time with his wife. She won't let him go to his favourite pubs in the East End and makes him stay home and look after their children, Ferenguola and Martinique. Resentment builds. He loses his mind and plots to kill her in his new film deliberately by accident in a horse riding incident. That's it. It would be a bit like that Vincent Price film where the actor bumps off his critics, or maybe an episode of Columbo.
Oh, I think it's a really good idea. I'm going to put it in the next film. I don't think it's very believable, though. That's the only thing. I don't think that would really happen, but I do like it. It's a good idea. I'm going to put it in the film.
And finally, Ian Bridgman says, "Hi, guys. I would like to see Chris Salt in a Guy Ritchie movie. He would be quiet and unassuming, but feared. The rumour is that he once killed a man with a part of a Lego Technics dinosaur. He would be played by Alan Cumming, I think."
That's a good idea. I'm going to put it in the film. And you know, the other idea that Richie could apply himself to, of course, Stephen!
Yes. Oh, we wouldn't want that in his hands.
You reckon?
No.
He'd do it justice.
No.
Of course he would.
We want Brett Ratner or McGee.
Really?
On that one, yeah.
Is McGee still working?
Yeah, he's doing Terminator 4.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank you very much indeed for all your suggestions for Text the Nation there.
Thanks for listening, and we're sorry if we've traumatised you with some of the musical choices this morning.
Yeah, we'll try and get a bit hipper next week. Actually, you're away next week, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's going to be Garth Jennings, the wonderful Garth Jennings.
You're out to Los Angeles again, doing a bit of globe-hopping, trotting. And yes, Garth is going to come in. And I think Garth and I are going to try and get it together to do a song for,
that would be great.
For you listeners. What's the status on the wedding situation? Has anyone come back to us about that?
Yes, we've had quite a few emails about the wedding. But the lady who texted us first, was she called Emma?
Yeah.
She is asserting her right to first dibs.
Right, okay.
So we're going to have a discussion about that.
We'll sort that out. We'll print some of them out and...
Don't forget, listeners, you can listen to this whole show again if you want to via Listen Again on the BBC Six Music website.
Or
the iPlayer. You can listen to it on the iPlayer. And you can download the filleted podcast with special new bits from about 6 o'clock on Sunday night from all major digital outlets.
Not many new bits, we should say. Like a little intro and outro. Plus you get some jingles in there. We're not allowed to put more in. We'd like to, but it's against the rules of the castle. You get chopped off, your head chopped off if you do that.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have a great Saturday.
Liz Kershaw is coming up, so stay tuned. Right now, we're going to leave you with a session from the Zootons. Have a great week. Bye!
Bye.
Oh, that's Ben Folds. It was going so well. I was talking really fast and everything was going to be fine. We had the Zootons, didn't we? Did we? Oh, I know. It's all going wrong now. See, it was all going... You should have just ignored me and played Ben Folds.
Here's a band with music.
Rock in the suburbs. Bye!